fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A fantastic Friday to you, as Daniel Craig would say. He says it every Friday. Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend. It's finally here. We're going to kick it off in style on the Cale Clark Show. 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call in and talk to me. And you're going to want to call in right now, because in just a few minutes, this is going to be coming up right after our first break, we're going to have our first ever National Catholic Spelling Bee. That's right, and you can get in on the action by calling 1-888-914-9149. It's a toll-free line to call on the Cale Clark Show. You can also tweet at us, of course, at any time. You can follow us on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. That's my personal, the show account, at Cale Clark Show. Email is always the same, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. But you can only be a contestant in the Catholic Spelling Bee if you call in. It's going to be live, and I'm not going to warn you what word I'm going to give you to spell. And this is, of course, based on the fact that last night was the National Scripps Spelling Bee Contest, which was broadcast, as it always is, on ESPN, because really it's a sport. And really an athlete won the contest. And she's incredible. And I'm going to tell you more about her in just a little while. Her name is Zaila Avant-Garde. And she really is avant-garde. She's a basketball savant. She's been in commercials with Steph Curry. Has several Guinness records for dribbling basketballs, multiple balls at a time. Unreal. And she's planning on playing in the WNBA, maybe working for NASA, all kinds of great plans, and she won last night. It was kind of cool. So we thought we'd have a Catholic response to that. And I'm going to see how well you know your Catholic spelling. And before we do that, though, oh, by the way, I should warn you that Lucas might try to call in. Producer Lucas might try to call in on his burner phone, because in the sixth grade, he was part of the spelling bee team. At his local school.
I don't want to brag too much, yeah, but in the sixth grade, I was on the spelling team, so.
Nice. Did you have, like, a varsity jacket for that or anything? Or with letters on it, you know, all kinds of different letters?
I will say, embarrassingly, I was on the bench, and then I got called in, and I misspelled the word peel. This is why it's important to ask for context, folks, because I put the wrong peel. I put P-E-A-L.
Oh, like the peeling of a church bell?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was like a banana peel. So.
And you slipped up. hey. Come on. All right. Anyways, you're supposed to have the sound effect ready. Anyways, but if you want to call in, and Lucas might be calling in too with a strange voice on a burner phone to compete in the Catholic Spelling Bee, again, call in right now. Get your place in line. 1-888-914-9149. It's coming up in just a few minutes. But first, one of the other things that I've been badgering Lucas to do, and he has done it. I was telling him about this, and we talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago. I think it was on Friday too, about two or so weeks ago. We talked about the TV show Shtizel, which is all about an Orthodox Jewish family living in this particular neighborhood in Jerusalem. It's on Netflix. It's become this global phenomenon. It's just kind of cool because so many people are very curious about how the Orthodox live their lives. But it's just interesting to see a TV show with no profanity, no nudity, where the characters are reverent towards God. God is ever pervasive, as he is in the real world. God is the unseen character in the show. And so I think, Lucas, you've been into that, right? You've been binge watching it, right?
I have, yeah. You got me hooked on it.
It's pretty good.
Interesting. I mean, it's just like you don't see that much in TV shows these days anymore, like this kind of reverence for God, but also it's like it's very real. Like, it's very down to earth. It's not like uberly I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, it's very human. Like, you know, love, loss, all kinds of just basic human experiences are in the show. And I got hooked on it. I ripped through all three seasons in record time. And I think I'm going to have to go to movies instead of TV shows, because they're just so time-consuming. Once you get hooked, you got to watch every episode. Whereas with a movie, you know, you're done in a couple hours. But at any rate, thinking about the Orthodox community and sort of related to that, I came across this incredible article in the New York Times about this Orthodox woman who got a medical degree, became a doctor, even though she has 10 children, and she did this in the midst of her family duties, didn't neglect any of them. This is an amazing story. I think we as Catholics can learn a lot from this, and I'm going to give you the connection in just a minute. But the story was called The Rabbi Said It Was Okay. And it was by Corey Kilgannon in the New York Times just a couple days ago on June 24th. And it's all about this, how this Hasidic Orthodox mother of 10 became a doctor. Her name was Alexandra Friedman. And a few years ago, and this is how the article starts out, a few years ago, she saw a T-shirt in a store that had this message on the front. It's kind of funny. Become the doctor your mother always wanted you to marry. I think that's pretty funny. Become the doctor your mother always wanted you to marry. And all kidding aside, that message kind of spoke to her because this was a goal of hers in a past life. And she lives, Alexandra Friedman, lives in a place called Monsey, New York, which is about 30 minutes north of New York City. It's mostly Orthodox Jewish people that live there. It's a bit of an enclave there. And it's a pretty strict community, this Hasidic community that she lives in. And this is what's so interesting about the TV show Shtizel, because it does shed some light on their traditions, why they do what they do. And many Orthodox women marry pretty young in life, and then their lives naturally revolve around caring for their family, and they're known for the somewhat inflexible lifestyle that they live. There are certain dress guidelines. They have to wear wigs over their natural hair in public, all kinds of traditions like that. And Alexandra Friedman and her husband, Yosef, they have 10 children. And the age range is from 21. There's a 21-year-old daughter in the family, and the youngest child is an 8-month-old baby son. But last month, Alexandra Friedman became Dr. Alexandra Friedman. She graduated from medical school, and she is now doing a residency in pediatrics. And this is incredible because she's actually one of the very few female Hasidic Jewish doctors in the United States. And Dr. Miriam Knoll, who's the president of the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association, she said this in the New York Times piece, and I quote, "It's unusual for medical students to have any children at all, let alone 10 children. So for her to come from this background and have that many children, you're already fighting an uphill battle, one that takes extraordinary drive and commitment," end of quote. And that's undoubtedly true. And so when Alexandra Friedman started thinking about this idea of going to medical school, that was 5 years ago, around the time when she saw that T-shirt, you know, become the doctor your mother always wanted you to marry, she started talking about this to her friends, and a lot of her friends were like, I can't even believe you're thinking about this. One of her friends has 14 children, and she said, you're never going to be able to pull this off. You've got 10 kids. You've got an incredibly busy schedule. It's a very important job that you have already as a wife and a mother. You're not going to be able to handle it. The rigors of medical school, all the exams, all the studying. I don't know how you're going to do this. Another one of her friends said, why don't you just become a cashier? You know, the supermarket or something. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's good, honest work. There's nothing wrong with that. But here's the thing. Alexandra Friedman is kind of cut from a different cloth. She had a bit of a different background. I'm going to tell you about that in just a second. But she actually thought that if she went to medical school, this would actually help her in her life and even spiritually. And here's what she said. She was quoted in a recent interview as saying this, Alexandra Friedman. She said, in Judaism, there's a belief that if you don't use the gifts that are given to you by God, you're not really honoring God. If you don't use the gifts given to you by God, you're not really honoring God. I just want to leave that thought hanging there for just a second, because I'm going to come back to that in just a minute. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, talking about this really interesting piece in the New York Times called The Rabbi Said It Was Okay, about how this Hasidic Orthodox mother of 10 became a medical doctor in the midst of her busy family life. So all the time that she was in medical school, Alexandra Friedman never once stopped taking care of her family, never once refrained from practicing her Jewish faith. She never studied on Jewish holidays. She never studied on the Sabbath. And of course, the Sabbath or the Shabbat, Shabbat Shalom, you know, the peace of the Sabbath, begins obviously for the Jews on Friday evening, and it goes to Saturday evening. So despite all this, despite the fact that she never stopped practicing her faith, and she didn't study on the Sabbath or anything like that, not only did she keep up everything that was going on in her life, she graduated at the top of her class. She was number one academically out of 135 students in her class at the Touro College of Osteopathic Medicine, which is located in Middletown, New York. She graduated on time. Not only was she number one in her class, she graduated on time within 4 years. Plus, here's the kicker. I can't even believe this. She gave birth to three children while she was in med school. Her eight-month-old son, Aaron, her youngest, and her now three-year-old twin girls, Mimi and Layla. That's unreal. But here's the thing. She wasn't always an Orthodox Jew. Now, she does come from a Jewish background, but her family was were secular. They were secular Jews, and very, it's, I guess in some ways there's a lot of similarities to people who are non-practicing Catholics. So her father was actually a U.S. Army general. So she was a bit of an army brat growing up. Alexander Friedman moved around the country a lot, and she actually considers herself to this day, back in those days and even today, she considers herself to be a feminist. And she actually, when she was in university, she did a degree in biology. And in her 20s, she actually did start medical school when she was in her 20s. But she dropped out because she started becoming really interested in Orthodox Judaism. She was looking for something a little bit more intense. And so the strict guidelines and lifestyle appealed to her, this idea of avoiding the distractions of the outside world. She began studying Yiddish, began wearing a wig, modest clothing, full length. She stopped driving. That is frowned upon in the Orthodox community for women to drive in some circles. She stopped having casual conversations with men or even looking at men in the eye. Smartphones, forget about it. Forget about it. No internet either, off limits. And in 2008, Alexandra Friedman moved into a Hasidic section of Crown Heights in Brooklyn. And she began studying at a Hasidic seminary, according to the New York Times. And that's where she met her husband. And his name was Joseph Friedman. He is a widower, was a widower. He's married to her now, of course. But he was a widower with two daughters from his previous marriage before his wife passed on. And they met, fell in love, married, and eventually that's when they moved to this place called Monsey in New York State. And then, of course, having this big family, several children later, she started thinking about medicine once again. And she said, and I quote, "Being religious was kind of a full-time job, but once I got the hang of motherhood and Orthodox life, that yearning sort of came back." And so she decided to speak to her rabbi about this concept of, you know, does this even make sense? Is this a crazy idea of me going to medical school, being the mom of 10 kids? And so she went to visit her rabbi, whose name was Aaron Cohn, Rabbi Aaron Cohn. And they started talking about it, and they realized how challenging it would be for her. Plus, there was going to be inevitable clashes between being in med school and being an Orthodox Jew. For example, she would have to get permission to use the internet to take her classes. She would have to interact with male students, male teachers, male doctors. What if she was doing an internship in the ER and she's working on a patient? Oh, all of a sudden, we're not done working on this guy, but now it's Sabbath. What do? Do I stop? Hasidic women are discouraged from driving a car. So how's she going to get there? How's she going to get to the school? So the rabbi actually gave her permission to do this because he remembered that his own grandfather, Rabbi Aaron Cohn's grandfather back in Israel, who was also a rabbi, he once encouraged a woman to become a midwife to help other women to give birth and take care of them. So he remembered what his grandfather did. And he said, "I'll tell you what, I'm going to agree to this. You can do this. You can do this." And then Alexandra Friedman said, "Well, yeah, well, maybe this is a crazy idea. Maybe my friend's right. I should simply become a cashier." And he said, "Absolutely not." The rabbi said, "No way, because you have gifts that were given to you by God, and you need to put them at the service of the community." And so that's what she did. She interviewed for med school, and she actually had her med school interview 4 days after giving birth to her seventh child. So the rabbi basically said, God's given you this passion, the ability to do it, and you are going to do it. And a lot of people in this Orthodox community where she lived in New York State really raised their eyebrows at this. They said, what, you're going to go to medical school? And she was like, hey, the rabbi said it was okay. What can I tell you? So, hey, ask him about it. So that kind of gave her an out. But eventually, she realized that a lot of women in the community really needed this, and they were really interested in talking to her because they wanted information on women's health issues, and they didn't know who to talk to about this. And there were all these questions about Jewish law, cultural guidelines with modesty, how do I see a doctor about certain things? And so there was a need for this, someone who was a woman who understood the community, understood medicine. And when COVID hit last year, her community of Monsey, like a lot of Orthodox communities, got hit pretty hard with COVID. And so she started giving them information, encouraged people to wear a mask, to get vaccinated. And her husband also, by the way, her husband, Yosef, sacrificed a lot for his wife to be able to do this. He's 50 years old. He has a minimum wage job, and he works with patients who have disabilities. And he actually took a night shift. So he worked all night long, and then he would take care of the kids during the daytime so that she could go to her med school classes. Student loan money, they got scholarships. But he said, in the New York Times piece on Yosef Friedman, he said, every obstacle just seemed to fall away. So that kind of gave us the courage that this was meant to be. This is what she's supposed to be doing. So now, what one might be tempted, and you're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, talking about this Orthodox woman named Alexandra Friedman, who has 10 children, became a medical school doctor, just graduated not long ago, just last month. Far from being a distraction, she actually said that her busy family life, having 10 children, that actually helped her with med school. It actually helped to balance her life out, because instead of going to the library with other students to study, she would simply go home, and her children would help her study. They would quiz her with flashcards, and they actually put stickers all over her anatomy and surgery textbooks, and I can kind of relate to that. Not that I've been to med school, but my daughter put stickers on everything, so I can see how that would have been an issue. But they helped her to practice her sutures before she went to bed. And believe it or not, she actually studied for her microbiology exam while she was in labor for 12 hours with her twin girls, who are now 3 years old. It's incredible. And she said, hey, it kept my mind off the contractions. So this is incredible. She got the rabbi's approval to drive the car to her classes. But here's what happened. Her husband, they didn't want to offend the community, so her husband actually drove her out of the neighborhood, and then they switched seats. He got out and he walked home, and she continued on to her class. So this is amazing. And so her biggest supporter, though, in all this, Dr. Alexandra Friedman now, was her rabbi, Aaron Cohen, who tragically, last year in June 2020, he contracted COVID-19 and he passed away at the age of 69. And so when her youngest child was born this past September, Alexandra Friedman honored the rabbi who encouraged her to pursue her dream of med school. She named her son after him, Aaron. And she said, the last thing that the rabbi told me was, don't quit. Don't quit. Don't quit. So that was an incredible article called "The Rabbi Said It Was Okay" in the New York Times by Corey Kilgannon. And it kind of got me thinking, some takeaways from this. We have a lot of excuses, don't we, as to why we're not practicing our Catholic faith to its fullest extent, why we're not praying. I'm too busy to pray. I'm too busy to get to Mass. I'm too busy to pray the rosary. I'm too busy to do mental prayer. I'm too busy to make some time to try to share the faith with my friends. I'm too busy. I don't have time. Well, this story kind of blows that out the window, doesn't it? This woman has 10 kids, and she somehow did it. She never stopped observing her faith, the precepts of her faith, her Jewish faith. She never worked on the Sabbath. She kept looking after her family, which is obviously a crucially important job in and of itself. And she did it. She got it done. And so, I don't know. I just found that inspiring in that sense. There's no excuses. There's never going to be an opportune time. The opportune time never comes. And a lot of you out there have a dream. Like, she had this dream of becoming a doctor that she had obviously when she was young, and it kind of got brushed aside for a while. But then she just couldn't let it go. And some of you out there have a dream, maybe even a calling that God has put on your heart. And maybe you've buried it. Maybe you've stuffed it. And maybe people have told you, you can't. You can't do it. You're too old. You're not at the right life stage. You're too young. There's so many excuses out there. And you've kind of neglected that, but it's still kind of there. So hopefully this is an encouragement to you. Because I really like what she said in the article, Dr. Alexandra Friedman, when she said that there's a belief in Judaism that if you don't use the gifts given to you by God, you're not really honoring God. And Cardinal Collins, who is a friend of the program, he was Cardinal Thomas Collins, who was on the show last week, he talks about this a lot. In fact, this is the theme of his ministry, stewardship. Stewardship, because we all want to hear those words at the end of our life from the Master, well done, good and faithful servant. So we have to have stewardship over three areas. Our time. Time is a treasure. We don't know how much of it we've got left. Our time, our talent, like this gift, this ability to study that Alexandra had. Our time, our talent, and our treasure. These are the resources, financial and otherwise, that God has entrusted to us. So we've got to prove faithful with all that. And if God has given you a gift, don't stuff it. Don't stuff it. And maybe one time in the near future, we'll have to do a show on how do you tell what your spiritual gifts are. Actually, we're going to be talking about that real soon on the Faith Explained program, because St. Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians, first letter to the Corinthians, which we're talking about on the show, he deals with spiritual gifts. We're going to be talking about that in just a few days on that show. So check out that show if you can't listen live at 12:30 Central. You can always check the podcast. But yeah, I think this is really, really important. That the opportune time never comes, and we should really get rid of our excuses for we don't have the time. She didn't have the time. She did it. She made time. And it's just a matter sometimes of being disciplined and being a good steward of our time so that we can be a good steward of our talents and use them in time for God, and not to mention our treasure as well. So I don't know. I thought that was really inspiring. If you want to react to that, 1-888-914-9149. You can call in on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. But when we come back, it's the first annual Catholic Spelling Bee. So call in right now if you want to be a contestant. 1-888-914-9149. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, we're having a great time on this Friday. So glad that you're with me. 1-888-914-9149. You're going to want to call in right now because we're about to have a great competition. If you want to compete in the annual Catholic Spelling Bee, the first annual Catholic Spelling Bee, which we are starting right now today. We just decided to do this afternoon, but it's going to become a tradition unlike any other. I can just feel it. It's the National Catholic Spelling Bee. You can call in right now to be a contestant. 1-888-914-9149. Now, what are people going to win, Lucas, if they can spell these words correctly?
Well, they will have their name immortalized on the Cale Clark Show Twitter account.
That's right. The internet is forever. So we're not allowed to give out prizes, but we can give out notoriety and fame.
Yes.
Liberally. So that's what we'll do. And yeah, just before we get going with that, now, this is a great competition. Now, last night, many of you probably watched the NBA Finals, Game 2. And there was another competition of sorts that ESPN was showing, and that was, of course, the Scripps National Spelling Bee. And Ben Knuckles wrote about it for the Associated Press. And he mentioned that with a lot of these competitors, and they're obviously young kids in the Spelling Bee, they usually give bios of these kids for the journalists to look at. And they try to make them sound like they have more than a one-dimensional life. They're not just about the spelling bee. They talk about all their other interests. You know, I play a musical instrument. This guy plays the cello. This one's in a science competition. Another competitor is involved in Indian classical dance. Well, again, the message is hey, these are normal kids. They're not robots. They're not simply middle schoolers with a monomaniacal devotion to memorizing the dictionary. However, in the case of the girl who actually won, Zaila Avant-Garde, and that's not her actual last name. That wasn't her original last name. I'll tell you why her name is that in just a moment. But she actually is pretty well-rounded. She's a really interesting character. She's 14 years old. She's from Harvey, Louisiana, and she's actually way more famous for her athletic prowess, not just her spelling. She's a basketball savant. She's a basketball prodigy. She's been in a commercial with Steph Curry from the Golden State Warriors, Chef Curry, and she has 3 Guinness World Records to her credit for dribbling multiple basketballs simultaneously. And I saw one of the videos. You can check out all kinds of videos about her on YouTube. It's incredible. She was on this sort of hovercraft-type device, dribbling about 6 basketballs at the same time. Unreal. She's got more than 12,000 Instagram followers. Wow. I mean, I don't know. I know Timmery's on Instagram. Wow, that might even be more followers than Timmery. I'm not sure. But anyways, lots of videos of her b-ball skills have been on Instagram, and she's gotten a lot of attention. WNBA players are sending her messages. She hopes to attend Harvard. She's homeschooled. It's amazing to me how a lot of these homeschooled kids are really kind of wise beyond their years. I don't know if there's a connection with that, but she hopes to attend Harvard. She wants to play in the WNBA. She wants to coach in the NBA. That is, if her ultimate plan of working for NASA falls through. So the backup plan is to be an NBA coach. She wants to work for NASA. Hey, why not? Why not? And she's a bit of a late bloomer, Zaila Avant-Garde, when it comes to spelling competitions. She didn't start doing this until she was 12 years old, the very, very advanced age of 12. She's now 14. And here's what she said. This is a quote from her. Basketball, I'm not just playing it. I'm really trying to go somewhere with it. Basketball is what I do. Spelling is really a side thing that I do. It's like a little hors d'oeuvre. But basketball is the main dish. Well, the side dish is working out pretty well. Here's a clip from CBS This Morning from this morning, talking about her win last night.
Maria. Does this word contain, like, the English name Murray, which could be the name of a comedian, or just the English name in general?
I don't see that here.
Bill Murray made the spelling bee.
Maria. M-U-R-R-A-Y-A.
That is correct!
That's incredible. I love how she kind of, I don't know whether she was stalling for time there, trying to make a little joke about Bill Murray. The word was Maria. Oh, does it have the name of a comedian in it? Anyways, I love the personality there. Zaila Avant-Garde, who won the Scripps National Spelling Bee last night. And really, this is incredible. She kind of bootstrapped herself up to this level because last year, during the pandemic, during COVID, there was no National Scripps Spelling Bee. The pandemic canceled it. But there were these sort of lower-level online spelling bees that she entered into instead. So she actually won a contest last year that was called the Kaplan Hexco Online Spelling Bee. It was one of several competitions that came out during the pandemic online after Scripps canceled last year. So she won $10,000 for coming in first in that competition, and she used that 10 grand to level up. She wound up paying for all these study materials for herself, and she hired herself a private tutor who just happened to be the runner-up in the Scripps National Spelling Bee in 2015, Cole Schaefer Ray. So $130 an hour is what she paid for the sessions with him. And she spent 7 hours a day studying and preparing for the spelling bee. And by the way, you can call in right now. Get in line. Call in 1-888-914-9149 if you want to take part in the Catholic spelling bee. Hey, if you're young, we have some kids' questions for you. So if your mom and dad are there, don't be afraid. Tell them to call this number, 1-888-914-9149. We have some kid-friendly questions. We have some adult-friendly spelling challenges. So why not call in? It's going to be fun. So the time commitment, obviously, to master spelling, like Zaila undertook, that is pretty big time. It's almost professional. 7 hours a day studying. And here's what she said. She said for spelling, she tried to do about 13,000 words per day, Wow. And that takes the full 7 hours. And she still had to do school, too, right? She said, I didn't want to go too overboard. I've still got school and basketball. Man, this is, I don't even know how she pulled that off. But anyway, she says that some of the spellers that are out there actually do way more work on this than she did. What? At any rate, well, this certainly paid off. All the preparation paid off. Here's what she got for winning last night, $50,000 in cash. And that was amazing. And by the way, her name, her last name is, Zaila Avant-Garde. Avant-Garde. And her dad actually changed her last name to Avant-Garde in honor of jazz musician John Coltrane. One of my favorites. So cool. That's so cool. So that's the kind of personality that she has. And she's also the first African-American champion, the first black American champion. There was a previous black winner of the competition who came from an international base. Jody Ann Maxwell from Jamaica won in 1998. But Zaila is the first African-American from the United States to win the competition. So congratulations to you, Zaila. That's amazing. So we're going to go to a quick break right now. If you want to call in and take part in the Catholic Spelling Bee, 1-888-914-9149. We'll be right back here on the K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
This is the K.O. Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the show. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. The Twitter handles, my personal, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We have a show account, too, at Cale Clark Show. The email address, cale@relevantradio.com, cale@relevantradio.com. And one thing you can do with the email address is email us questions that you want answered about the Catholic faith, because we collect those. We do answer those questions as best we can. We have some AMA sessions that pop up from time to time, and we do like to get your questions on the show. So I encourage you to use that, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And I know that we've been talking about doing this Catholic Spelling Bee, and I have some, this is just live radio. These are the perils of live radio. I know a lot of you have been trying to call in and get through. We're having some technical issues with our phone system right now, and we hope to have that cleared up very, very soon. Once again, that number, 888-914-9149, if you want to be a contestant on the Catholic Spelling Bee. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we hope to have those cleared up soon, so please don't give up. But in the meantime, I want to tell you, first of all, I can't forget this, the week that was is coming up, and producer Lucas Holt, really, this was a Herculean effort on his part to pull this together, and he really deserves a round of applause because he has not only moved to Chicago over the past week, he's had to learn a whole new system, a new studio, a new everything. He's in our Park Ridge location right now, and it has been, I think his head's about to explode. So the fact that he was able to pull this together is, man, this is props, Lucas. That's all I can say. And we're going to hear that coming up real soon. We've had a great week on the K.O. Clark Show. But came across a really thought-provoking piece in Christianity Today magazine that was written by this guy named Chris Goswami. And he actually was the son of a Hindu priest, back in India. And he eventually moved to the UK, and he starts off his little story about how he experimented with Christianity. With this account, he said, and I quote, "Even at the distance of over 40 years, I still remember having my fingerprints documented for my criminal record. It was the first time in my life I had felt ashamed about anything. The young police constable was pleasant enough as he gently guided me through the process of fingers, thumbs, and ink pads. He was sensitive to the sense of grief originating from a single sound in the room, the uncontrollable weeping of my distraught mother sitting a few feet away as my father tried quietly calming her. We were recent immigrants," he says, "to the UK from India, and they were confused and shocked. They had taken themselves, they had wrenched themselves out of established lives as school teachers in India. They had traveled to England by sea. They worked in a shoe factory. They sold bus tickets, all so that my brother and I could go to school. For families immigrating from India, providing an education for their children was and still is the driving priority. So when my parents discovered that their teenage son had spent years secretly engaging in arson and shoplifting just for fun, they could barely comprehend it. And by the way, this isn't me talking, Cale Clark. This is a quote from, I didn't do it. This is a quote from Chris Goswami, who was writing in Christianity Today magazine. He said this, "Sometimes it takes the tears of a loved one to stop us in our tracks and focus our minds on where we've gone wrong. But what exactly was I ashamed of? My mother's grief had brought sudden clarity about the damage that I caused to my family. Shameful, lasting damage. It dawned on me that actions had consequences. There really is a moral law in the universe, and I had overstepped it. Actions had consequences, just as my family had taught me all along. The Hindu idea of karma is that you get what you deserve. And here was karma spectacularly demonstrated." So that was Chris Goswami, and he was talking about this Hindu concept of karma. He had finally been caught for his juvenile crimes of arson, shoplifting. He was being fingerprinted. His parents came to pick him up at the police station in the UK, and they were just aghast. They had no idea that he had this secret life going. And so he never even had thought about this concept of following Jesus, being the son of a Hindu priest. And he grew up, you know, after his parents immigrated to England, he grew up in this very working class English town, and the Indian community, which is really close-knit, that was kind of their life. And they used to celebrate Hindu religious festivals, and he never once heard the message about Jesus, or so he says, in his first 18 years. Obviously, he'd heard about Jesus, but he hadn't really heard what is Christianity actually all about. He actually sort of thought to himself, hey, if you're a Christian, that means that you're probably Caucasian and British, and that's it. But when he went to university, when he left home for the first time, he got to know a bunch of believers in Jesus on campus. And they were very interested in him. They would take him along to meetings where someone would give their testimony, how Jesus changed their life. And he would talk about it with these new friends that he met. And he was initially very skeptical about Christianity, but he kept meeting with these guys. He kept being friends with them. He knew that they cared about him as a person. But the thing was for Chris, he just couldn't accept Christianity because of the idea of grace. He just felt it was immoral and unacceptable. He believed in karma, like I said earlier, this idea of being caught for shoplifting, caught for committing arson. Okay, now I'm booked. That makes sense. I'm getting my just desserts here. But this idea that someone else would suffer shame and pain for the wrongs that he had done, he just found that absurd and repugnant. He thought that grace and karma were total opposites. And again, this is Chris Goswami writing in Christianity Today. And then finally, the light bulb kind of flicked on for him when one of his university friends, who was named Alex, said, "Hey, Chris, you can argue forever about the unfairness of the cross, and in many ways, you're absolutely right. Or you can simply accept that this man, Jesus, died. He's more than a man, of course. He's the God-man because he loves you and he cares about you." And so here's what he did. He said, "You know what? I'm going to do a test here. I'm going to do an experiment with Christianity. I'm going to take a 6-month experiment with Jesus. I'm going to try to believe in him and see what happens over the next 6 months." And he figured out, you know what? It's like taking a car for a test drive, for an extended test drive. And I'll know in that time, after 6 months, whether it's true or not. I've got nothing to lose. So he did that. He started trying to practice Christianity. 6 months became 12. And then it became 24 months. It became 2 years. Why? Well, he says mostly because he really liked the people that he met on campus that were Christians. Who knows? Maybe there's some pretty girls involved. I don't know. But he eventually graduated with an engineering degree, began working on his PhD. But he said he was really a lazy Christian, barely read his Bible. Prayer was an afterthought. He only went to church when he felt like it, which wasn't very often. But then what really changed him and got him going was he got baptized eventually. And this is kind of a major difference in which Catholics would view how you become a Christian a lot differently from some evangelicals, because there's this idea of the sinner's prayer. You pray this sinner's prayer, and then you're sort of in with Jesus. Well, I think that's a starting point. Of course, it's great to pray, but we would say you don't become a Christian until you're baptized. Because if you're not baptized, you're not a Christian. You're actually something else. You might believe in Jesus, but you're actually called a catechumen. And this is why we have the RCIA program. People who believe in Jesus, they want to become Catholic, but the way you actually formally do that is by being baptized. Well, apparently at this time, Chris was going to an Anglican church, and his Anglican minister said, "You really should be baptized." And he's like, "Oh, I don't really want to do this. This seems like a British thing, a cultural thing." But he did it. He got baptized, and he didn't realize it until afterwards, but really God started working on him in a special way after his baptism. And he felt called to go back to India. And so he went there to teach in India, and he was kind of in the wilderness. He had this job that was promised to him where he'd be teaching at this college, and he thought it was going to be fantastic. Well, it turned out he was in a place that was off the beaten path, barely running water, scorpions and snakes were outside. It was really like what Jesus said in the Gospel of Luke, "You will trample on snakes and scorpions." Well, that was literally true in his case. And he was kind of on this extended wilderness retreat, almost like St. Paul going to Arabia. And that's where God really started working on him. And he developed his relationship with him for real. Now, we got to keep praying for this guy that he takes the next step and discovers the Church of Christ, the Catholic Church. But what I thought was interesting about this article was the concept of taking Jesus for a test drive. And not that he put it in those terms, but this sounds an awful lot like what Jesus himself dared people to do if you read the Gospel of John. And here's what Jesus says in John 7, verse 17. "Anyone who chooses to do the will of God will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own." So if anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching I have comes from God or whether I'm speaking on my own authority. That's what Jesus said in John 7, 17. So it's very much like the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Why not try it? You've got nothing to lose. And that's what this guy Chris said. He said, "Hey, I'm going to try this Christian thing. I'm going to give it a shot for 6 months and see what happens." Why not? And this is what Jesus says to do. And I think I hope Chris decides to try the Catholic Church as well. And of course, you can't really partake in it until you actually become a member in terms of the sacraments and all that stuff. But I pray that he checks that out as well and looks into the evidence for the Catholic Church. And so this is really interesting because the devil really likes to tempt us with disobedience. That's his ultimate temptation, right? Because he's disobedient to God. That's how he became who he is. And so he wants us to be disobedient too. But the paradox is we only really find out who Jesus is and what the faith is all about for us when we are obedient to it, when we actually practice it. And so Jesus says, you've got nothing to lose. And if you actually try to live my teaching, you're going to find out. You're going to have experiential knowledge, not just intellectual knowledge that's true. You're going to see God working in your life. And this is incredible. And I've got some really good news for you. Not only can you try that in your life, and you should, and tell other people to do that too, why not take a chance? We have the phone system working. Yay! It is back online, and we can do now our National Catholic Spelling Bee. And I am so pleased to take your calls for this. And I've got some really cool words picked out for you. So the phone lines are all lit up. This is great. And we are going to go, first of all, I got to go to this guy first because he's a faithful listener to the show, listens every day. Paul calling from Youngstown, Ohio. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Cale. I hope the words aren't too difficult.
Well, we shall see. We shall see. So here's your word, Paul. And Lucas, do we have some game show music for the... There we go. Okay. I don't know if there's official Spelling Bee music, but Jeopardy music will have to do. This is probably courtesy of Patrick Alog, who's a huge Jeopardy fan. So here is your Catholic word, Paul. You're going to have to spell for me. Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes.
Oh.
Give it a shot.
E.
Mm-hmm.
D.
Mm-hmm.
D.
Mm-hmm.
L.
Yep.
E.
Mm-hmm.
A.
No. Close, but no cigar. That's a tough one. It's a tough one. And you don't know what the word is until I give it to you. So I was going to say, hey, you could Google it. But if you don't know how to spell it, it's hard to Google stuff, right? So the actual spelling, and Paul, we can't blame you for this. That was a tough one. I've got some tough ones here. But Ecclesiastes, of course, the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes. But good shot.
Oh, I would have blundered somewhere on that one. Yeah, that's tough.
You just put the A first before the I, but it was close. It was close. But thanks, Paul. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate that. We're going to go now to Teresa, who's calling from California. Hey, Teresa.
Hi. Hi, Claire.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm doing really, really well. Okay, so here is your word.
Okay.
Deuteronomy. The book
about
of Deuteronomy.
About D U.
Oh, no. Close. Uh-oh. It's D E U T E R O N O M Y. It's a tough one. These are tough. Do you think I should go easier on the people, Lucas? Yes, he says.
That's
all right.
Not too bad a word.
Well, it's hard sometimes. I'm really bad at spelling things out loud. You know, I have to write things down. But anyways, thank you so much, Teresa. Thanks for playing. We're going to go now to Kathleen, who's calling from Croydon, Pennsylvania. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Cal. Hi, Lucas, the whole Relevant Radio family.
Hey, it's great to have you
on. How are you?
I am well.
It's great.
I'm well. Okay, so
great. I love your show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for calling in. So, here's your word. Here's your word for the spelling bee, the Catholic spelling bee.
Okay.
Zephaniah.
Capital Z.
Mm-hmm.
E P H.
Mm-hmm.
I.
Mm-hmm. Oh no.
N I A H.
No. It's actually Z. Well, we say Z in Canada, but Z E P. H-A-N-I-A-H. That's a tough one.
Zephaniah.
Yeah. It was a good try, though. It was a good try. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Hey, listen, we'll try to squeeze in a couple more calls in just a moment, but I really apologize for the technical difficulties we had. It's kind of out of our hands, but Lucas put so much work on this. We have to play really quickly for you the week that was on the Cale Clark Show. Kick it off, Lucas. Just because I'm a Leafs fan, I don't hate the Canadians. I've got lots of friends from Montreal. I'm happy for them because a lot of them, and probably you're in this boat too, Christine, you don't remember the last time that Montreal won the Stanley Cup in 1993.
I actually turned two the day after they won it the last time.
Yeah. So for a generation of Canadian fans, like, they don't know the success they've had in the past. Like, it was just dynasty after dynasty, 24 Stanley Cups. I mean, come on. I mean,
to be fair to the Habs fan base, they certainly know. We're just bitter.
St. Jerome was a great scripture scholar, a great translator of the Bible. We do not worship relics. We do not adore them. Okay, adoration is another word for worship. We don't adore them for fear that we should bow down to the creature rather than to the creator. Now, of course, this would be idolatry, pure and simple. We don't do that, though. St. Jerome goes on to say we venerate the relics of the martyrs in order the better to adore him whose martyrs that they are. The idea of Christ on the cross, now he doesn't slip in his Christian worldview, C.S. Lewis and the Abolition of Man, until the very, very end in the appendix when he gives this quote from John's Gospel, John 12:24, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies. Talk to me about the concept of Christ on the cross as the summit of sacrificial love, the kind of self-sacrifice that the poet Horace spoke about. It's good and fitting to die for one's country. And how in Christ, the human chest has reached its highest development. Here we have a man with a chest, not just a man, but the God-man himself.
Absolutely. And it's signaled earlier on in The Abolition of Man, even before we get to the quotation from John's Gospel, when Lewis talks about the quote from Horace, Dulce et Decorum Est, he says, you know, he just slips in alongside that. And another example of this is, greater love hath no man.
Mm.
And there again, a quotation from John's Gospel, Jesus is saying, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Yes, it's highly appropriate that, therefore, at the end of the appendix, he returns to that point because, yeah, in Christ we see the epitome, the summit of self-sacrificial love.
St. Augustine, in the year 400 AD, he said, it's true. Christians pay religious honor to the memory of the martyrs to excite us to imitate them, to encourage us to imitate them, and to obtain a share in their merits and the assistance of their prayers. They're not separated from the church on earth. They pray for us. They care about us. Hey, that was the week that was from producer Lucas Soule. How much time we got, Lucas? 30 seconds. Okay, Dave from Chicago, real quick. 10 seconds. Can you spell Sheen like Fulton Sheen?
Capital S-H-E-E-N.
You got it. And